Good evening, councillors. Good evening, staff, and good evening to the ladies in the audience. Welcome to this council meeting number 16, the time being 5:30. I'd like to remind all in attendance that it is council policy to record council meetings. The audio recording of this meeting will be made available to the public on council's website for a period of 12 months. In accordance with council policy, I'll ask the General Manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed.
And confirmed. First thing I would like to do is to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land and pay my respect to them, their customs, and to their elders past, present and future. Attendees, tonight we have myself, Councillor Wass, Deputy Mayor Reet, Councillor Atkinson, Councillor Fox, Councillor Chatterton, Councillor Grace and Councillor Winter. Staff in attendance, we have our General Manager, Mr. Arnold, our Deputy General Manager, Mr. Ferrier, our Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Breen, our Manager, Governance and Property Services, Mr. Smee, Manager of Development Services, Mrs. Loxley, our Senior Planning Officer, Mrs. Danielle Gray, our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Amanda Morton. Apologies. We have three apologies for tonight. Councillor Berry, Councillor Bastone and Councillor Percy. On page two, councillors, confirmation of the minutes of council meeting number 15 held on the 8th of August. Do I have a mover and seconder that the minutes of that meeting be confirmed? Thank you, Councillor Grace. Thank you, Councillor Fox. I'll put that recommendation. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. Workshops held since council meeting on the 8th of August. There's been one on the RV strategy on the 15th of August. Are there any declarations of interest, noting that DA 2015397 has been withdrawn from tonight's agenda? There are none. Thank you. We'll move on to page three. Questions on notice from the public. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from the public. Questions without notice from the public. Are there any questions? There are none? No? Okay. That's fine. Thank you. Questions on notice from councillors. On page three, Councillor Grace, regarding progress or lack of progress at the shopping centre of Margate, and the response from Mr. Arnold. From Councillor Percy, regarding policies, and the response from Mr. Arnold on page four. A question from Councillor Winter regarding Morris Avenue and a response from Mr. Breen. From Councillor Winter regarding the Taruna Bowls Club, when discussions etc. are going to occur or have occurred, and a response from Mr. Breen on page four. Questions without notice from councillors. Are there any questions without notice? Councillor Winter.
Could I ask a question without notice in closed session in relation... Oh, do I
have closed session?
Yep, cool.
Thank you. Councillor Winter.
I was just wondering if the General Manager could give us an update on Spring Farm development.
Mr. Arnold?
Or anybody?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, it's probably more appropriate that Mrs. Loxley gives that update. I know she's been having recent meetings.
Thank you, Mrs. Loxley.
Thank you. We have had a meeting with the proponent and a lot of his representatives, and they sought clarification on a number of conditions, and we've responded to that. We've now had submitted on, I can't remember if it was late Thursday or early Friday, the restoration plan and the bushfire management plan, and so we're just sending our comments back to those and making sure we agree to those. So those came in late last week.
Thank you, Mrs. Loxley. Councillor Grace?
Just on Spring Farm, Mr. Mayor, I mean, can we get some sort of a deadline? I mean, this is ridiculous, the time this has taken to get through council. Council ought to be ashamed of themselves, because this is not...
Councillor Grace?
Well, the message is, Mayor, can we have a report when can council staff give us some advice when work can commence on that site?
Mrs. Loxley?
It's not as simple as to answer that, because we're beholden to the developer to supply some information to us, so I'm not in control of his timeframes. One of the things we did agree to do at the last meeting was to give them a comprehensive list of matters that were still outstanding and matters they had completed. So we provided them with that comprehensive list, and there are a number of matters they still need to address.
Thank you, Mrs. Oxford.
Can I just ask a further question to that? Mr. Mayor, are we in a situation where we can invite them to a council meeting and sit so we can talk again about these conditions? Because, this, as I said...
We can't change those conditions, Councillor.
Well, if we can't change them, we set them in the first place.
That's right, so we can't change them now.
Well, they should. I thought they were resolved in the first place, Mr. Mayor, but is there any way that we can speed this thing up, for goodness sake?
The applicant accepted the conditions when that was approved, and the applicant then sold the property. And the new applicant, after some length of time, wanted to appeal those conditions, which council approved or allowed the applicant, the new owner, to do. And staff, as the general manager and Mrs. Loxley said, are trying to work with the now owner to get that done. And you, like the rest of us, we would like to see it tomorrow, if not earlier.
Look, I understand that. Thanks, Mayor. I don't want to prolong it, but I'm so frustrated.
I think we all are, Councillor, but there's only ways that we can do it, and we've got a legal
crazy.
Form to follow.
Thank you.
We'll move on to page 5, questions on which notice has been given. And this one is a notice of motion regarding annual awards, and I take it you formally move that, Councillor Chadden?
I do, thank you.
Do I have a seconder? Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Chadden.
Thank you, Mayor. The motion is that the report be provided to investigate options to present Council's annual award, Citizenship of the Year, Young Citizen of the Year and Community Event of the Year and Merit Awards on a separate date to the citizenship ceremony held on Australia Day. We had some debate some months ago about whether we should have things on Australia Day or not. That was one issue, but the other side of the issue is that the two at the moment, I believe, is getting too large to have both events, the citizenship ceremony and the awards, at the same time, at the same venue. People who wish to go to the awards ceremony can't get in because we have so many people wishing to do their citizenship ceremony on Australia Day, which is fine. That's their choice. So I believe we should look at odd options, getting a staff report to say, okay, if the citizenship ceremony is gaining momentum every year and getting larger and larger, that is one event, and the other event is our awards. It used to be held not on Australia Day. It used to be held on the Friday preceding Australia Day, and it was then opened up to most community organisations, all people who had received the reward in the past, and family and friends of those that were receiving the awards in this coming year. I'm open to where we have it. We used to have it here at the Chamber. Then when the beach events started to happen on Australia Day, we moved it down to Christopher Johnson Park. Staff were very sceptic of that because of the change in weather conditions that could happen. It moved from there up to St Clement's Church Hall down here in Beach Road, and from there it moved up to the Twin Ovals. So it has moved around, it has had changes. All I'm saying is let's have a report, let's see what we can do, and let's see if we can keep as many people happy as possible.
Thank you, Councillor Chadden. I will put the item to the vote. Moved by Councillor Chadden, seconded by Councillor Atkinson, that a report be provided that investigates options to present Council's annual awards, in brackets Citizen of the Year, Young Citizen of the Year, Community Event of the Year and Merit Awards, close brackets, on a separate date to the citizenship ceremony held on Australia Day. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? Is carried unanimously. The next item is petitions. Petitions still being actioned. There is one petition. That part is there's no petitions being actioned, but petitions received in the last period. There has been one in relation to Morris Avenue, Taroona, and that will be on our council meeting on the 12th of September. That's the next one. The open session of council will now adjourn, and we'll move in and act as a planning authority. So the Planning Authority meeting will commence at 5:40 p.m. The first report is a report of officers, and there is a recommendation on page 7. Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Thank you, Councillor Grace. Are there any questions, comments, councillors, on the delegated authority? If not, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Chadden, seconded by Councillor Grace, that the report be noted. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. On page 8 is Development Application 2015296, an application for visitor accommodation at 211 Proctors Road, Certificate of Title 124824-1, 215 Proctors Road, Certificate of Title 146636-1, and Crown Land Titles, Certificate of Title 152558-1 and 120826-1, Kingston, for Irenic Planning. There is a recommendation on page 61.
Also move.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Fox.
The recommendation for refusal comes with 9 reasons for refusal. All of them I agree with. I really see that this is a over-intensification of an environmental living zone and doesn't meet many of the criteria expected from that zone. I'd be interested to hear what my other councillors have to say, but I really think that this is not something we should be considering as being appropriate for this location. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Grace?
I've looked at this, Mayor. As you know, I support development. Most of the items in here by staff have ticked the boxes, as I understand it. And then it's only refused on the basically of environmental issues, which again is not. I don't think it's substantial to refuse this in the fact that it will end up going to the planning resource, and I think we'll get beat at the planning resource there because I just can't come to terms, that's myself, on these conditions for refusal. Mind you, I haven't got any anything in front of me to satisfy you to the other way, but I'm just saying that it seems that the report is having a two-way stab at it.
Okay, your point is noted. Councillor Atkinson?
I just have a number of questions now.
Certainly.
Firstly, on page 20, there's discussion about the expected traffic levels being excessive, and yet that seemed to be... Sorry to flick through this. From page 39, there was a statement. Halfway down the page, it says traffic conflict at the junction. The traffic will operate at Sidra level of service A with a very low degree of saturation. There will be negligible queuing or traffic delay. There seem to be two different things in the report to me, that one was saying that there'd be excessive traffic and one was saying that there'd be negligible problems with the traffic. And I just wondered if there's some clarification of that.
Ms Gray, would you like to respond, please?
Through the Chair, the application, that clause, it's been answered by both myself as a planner and also our development engineer. So the issue of traffic was looked at from two points of view. One, from the point of view of an engineer who has looked at the traffic impact assessment and looked at the traffic levels and compliance with Australian standards. So purely from an engineering perspective. Where there's a differing opinion is that the planner has looked at it from an amenity point of view. So I haven't looked at the Australian standards. My comments in relation to the amount of traffic levels are from an amenity point of view. You're going from approximately 2 to 3 vehicle movements a day, which is the current, there's only one property that uses that, and the change from that to up to 100 vehicle movements per day more during the construction. Now, keeping in mind that those traffic movements don't include staffing numbers because the report, it doesn't confirm how many staff. So it would be at least 100 vehicle movements a day. So one of several of the performance criteria where there's a discretion triggered, we have to look at it from an amenity point of view. And my determination in looking at amenity, while the extent of traffic doesn't cause for concern under Australian standards and engineering standards, from the point of view of amenity and impact on properties, my argument is that you could consider that excessive compared to what is there now and what will be experienced by the other user of that right of way.
Thank you, Ms. Gray. Okay, so it's the change you're more interested in than the absolute level. The next one was similarly on page 20. It talks about... where have we got to? Noise. There's reference to excessive noise and effect on the neighbours. And once again, on page 37, there was a... let me flick through to it. It said... There's a section on noise emissions, and the bottom of the third paragraph it says... Noise from these activities, which include practicing Tai Chi, which is not a particularly noisy activity, noise from these activities is unlikely to cause environmental harm. So once again, I was a bit confused about the conflicting advice I had here.
Thank you. Ms. Gray?
Through the Chair, pretty similar situation. We've got a health officer who has assessed it under EMCA, Environmental Protection Management, and also noise standards under the planning scheme, which stipulate decibels. They measure at the property boundary. Anything over, say, approximately 55 decibels could be considered environmental harm under their legislation. Under planning, again, it's sort of like the traffic issue. We've said that currently it's bushland. It's very secluded, despite how close it is to Kingston, and to be going from nothing to essentially like a little mini suburb with facilities, the traffic movement, there will be a noise impact that affects amenity of those who live within hearing range of that. It might not trigger a discretion or in and of itself the decibels to refuse it under environmental health standards, but from a planning perspective where we look at the amenity and how it will impact the amenity, which is a bit of a grey area, but nonetheless, the noise that you would anticipate from this development, the operation of the development, the hours of operation, the days, given it's pretty much a 24/7 type nature of the use, it would, from an amenity point of view, you would anticipate that there would be issues for adjoining property owners, while those noise levels in and of themselves may not trigger, go over the maximum decibel range. It's still the constant, and the perception, the constant noise from the use.
Okay, thank you. I suspect the next question will get a similar answer, but I'll still ask it. There's comments about light in that same page 20, nighttime illumination of the development, and about the dark backdrop at night for people down Firth Side and so on. And yet, once again, on page 37... it says external lighting is considered unlikely to cause environmental harm within any neighbouring properties, and there was a comment I think on page 51, if I can find it, bear with me. Talking about the light, said, I visited the site and walked to it and viewed it from Albion Heights to get a feel for the proposed development. In my opinion, the proposal will not diminish the wooded backdrop to Kingston, as this is already severely eroded, especially to the south, and due to the contours of the site may blend into the landscape. So once again, I suspect the answer will be the same, but once again, I felt like I was reading two opposing things there.
That's great.
Through the chair, very similar as to the noise levels. Essentially, you're going from no development whatsoever, very secluded, very quiet, you can see Kingston in the distance. You're going to a development where you would be expected those dwellings, units to be illuminated. The centre where the meals would be taken and offices, that would be illuminated, roadways illuminated. Essentially, that is part of the consideration of the impact on amenity.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Final question was on page 56, the sort of the second paragraph there. To me, had a lot of subjective language, or passive and subjective language. And development, if approved, would likely be the largest accommodation development of its kind within the Kingborough municipality. The proposal is substantially larger than what one would normally expect. I wondered who one was and what would we normally expect.
Ms. Gray?
Through the Chair, I've been in planning for 20 years and 13 of those at Kingborough Council. The only other proposal that I've assessed that even comes close to the scale of this visitor accommodation is Woodbridge Hills Hideaway, which is at the top of Woodbridge Hill Road. Now that was approved, it was probably approximately 10 years ago, without objections being received. What I would typically expect to see with visitor accommodation when people come in is that you would either get a renting out a room in a residence downstairs type thing, or one or two cabins. I certainly haven't seen in 20 years something quite of this scale. It is quite a large development. That in and of itself is not a problem, but it does present issues when you measure it against the standards under the planning scheme. It triggers a few discretions in relation to the scale and the size, which then trigger consideration of the impact on amenity for neighbours. And that is something that is subjective. It's quite a grey area, so it's taking into account the current situation and what the planning scheme requires us to consider, and one of those considerations were things like privacy, seclusion and residential amenity. So we've looked at a broad range of issues with planning, the lighting, the traffic. It's all of that together, and the impact on the neighbours, how that would affect them, is ultimately our decision, our determination.
Thank you, Ms. Gray.
No, thank you. Look, that clarifies a lot of things for me, because I didn't realise that we had the ability to take into account effect on neighbours to this degree, and I know that been, you know, of course there are different zones and different situations, but places where neighbours have been very unhappy with the change to their suburb and how it's not what they expected at all, and yet we haven't been able to say anything about it. And it's interesting that in this case that the effect upon the neighbour can be such a large impact on whether we approve it or not. So that was all very educational for me, as I certainly haven't been a planner ever, let alone for 13 years, but I am gradually learning, so thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Ree.
Thank you. Look, I seconded the motion because I believe, and I say unfortunately because I think it is unfortunate, that refusal is necessary in this case because of the sheer scale of the development. I think, you know, we of course welcome developments such as this in our municipality. However, this one, unfortunately, being in an environmental living zone, is the sheer scale of it makes it incompatible with that. And I think that the reasons for refusal that have been outlined in the recommendation show pretty clearly the issues that are wrong, that it has in relation to not being small scale, the impact on the neighbours, the fact that the noise emissions weren't properly documented would be a concern to me as well, and that was pointed out in the report. The fact that it exceeds the height by so much, it's always difficult when we have planning matters and we say, well, is there an alternative solution? But in this case, there are so many different reasons to refuse this. I don't believe that we have any choice. I think that it would be a wonderful addition to Kingborough, but just the size of it and the location of it in this particular zone, I think, makes it not suitable for this, and certainly that's been backed up by the 9 grounds for refusal there.
Thank you.
Councillor Fox, if you'd like to close debate.
I think Councillor Reid has provided an excellent summary. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Reid, that in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, the Planning Authority resolves that the report of the Manager Development Services be received, and that the development application visitor accommodation at 211 Proctors Road, Certificate of Title 124824/1, and 215 Proctors Road, Certificate of Title 146636/1, and Crowdlands Title, Certificate of Title 152558/1, and Certificate of Title 120826/1, Kingston for Irenic Planning be refused for the following reasons, and in your agenda there are 9 reasons for refusal. I'll put that recommendation. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? We'll have a division or a show of hands, please. Those in favour of the motion are Councillors Winter, Councillor Chatterton, Councillor Fox, Councillor Atkinson, Councillor Reid, Councillor Wass, and opposing the motion, Councillor Grace. Motion is carried. The next item is on page 146. It's a development application 201686 for road reconstruction and widening, including footpath, retaining wall and relocation of shed at Esplanade for Beach Road, from Beach Road to Drew Point Reserve, including works at 20, 26, 28, 32, 34, 36, 38, 48 and 55 Esplanade Margate for Kingborough Council. And the recommendation is on page 160. And I have a mover in Councillor Fox. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Reid. Councillor Fox.
It's a very unpleasant decision to be making here, and that we had before us a plan which appeared to be perfectly fine, and then the practicalities of that plan became obvious during the consultation phase. But I do think that the current proposal before us is a better long-term outcome. It's unfortunate that some of the residents will be personally affected and lose part of their land, but in the long run I think they will also benefit by having a better view, a better access to the foreshore, which they all value highly. And I think it will, the whole safety and flow of the road will be an improvement and a better outcome for the community. So that's why I support this recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. I just had one question. I'm not going to find the page, sorry. There was a... There was a question. There was a statement about the percentage of land being taken or being used. On page 151, I think. Yeah, 151, section 12.11. Says the proposal results in a very small reduction in land size for each of the affected properties, in all cases less than 2%. Could I just have that confirmed that that's the case for number 32, what the reduction in the property size is?
There was a plan with the amount on that.
I looked at that plan on page 167, and that's why I'm asking the question.
Mrs. Loxley?
Yes. Through you, Chair, I think the report has made an error there. It's less than 2% for all the properties except for number 32, and that's around about the 10% mark for property 32.
Thank you. No, that's where I made it, so thank you.
Councillor Grace? Councillor Reid?
As Councillor Fox said, this is not... an easy decision for us to make, and we've previously discussed this in a variety of forums, and in particular in a workshop where we looked at the plans
in fact, two workshops, I think, or maybe even three. So we have sought to look at all the available options, and this one was the one that was the most acceptable, considering that we're talking about an area where there are over 2,000 car movements a day. I think 2,300 was the number we were given at one of the workshops. So it is not a, to me, that's not a low traffic road. And in order to provide the safest access to that road, we need to be able to construct this in this way, which does unfortunately take some land from a number of property owners there. The seaward side of the development, as we know, has been looked at, and there were a range of reasons why that wasn't desired. And this goes, this is not just about cost, but one of them was that really struck me was that if we went with the seaward side development, then there was not the option to, then we would not be addressing the safety issue with
point of order. We're in a planning authority, are we not? This appears to be a representation you'd make.
Your point of order?
Well, we're sitting as a planning authority, but we're not the developer here, we're assessing it.
That's correct.
Continue. There is mention within this report of the option of going on the seaward side as opposed to the path that has been chosen, and the reason that I support the path that has been chosen and this development application, one of the reasons is that it, if we go the seaward side, then it will not resolve the site issues in terms of the bends, and it will then not comply with the AusRoads regulations. And I think that's a really important consideration in looking at this. So this will provide us with, provide a safer road for the residents. Look, it's a difficult issue, and if I was a property owner, and I do have empathy for them, I can understand the attachment that they have to all parts of their property, but we have to assess this. This complies with the planning scheme, and so I support the recommendation as printed.
Thank you, Councillor Reed. Councillor Grace?
I don't support this. It just goes to show how inconsistent this council is in its decision making. Particularly with planning, all due respects, because if you go back to Old Station Road, one could argue, you're talking about does it comply to such road, whatever you quoted, Councillor Reed, requirements. Conyngham Old Station Road certainly wouldn't meet those requirements, and yet we all sat round here and passed that. Yes, they were, just. Anyway, we talk about the sea side of the there's a lot of environmental issues here, Aboriginal issues and goodness knows what. It's not even reported in here. If this was a private development application from a private developer, this would be thrown back for more information. This is council passing something for council,
providing
the proper information.
Council is the applicant.
Yes,
you are
council.
Now, as a planning scheme, making that decision.
Well, there's two standards, in my opinion, Mr. Mayor, whether you like it or not. But anyway, I certainly will not support this this job down there. And as Councillor Winters just pointed out, we're only dealing with the application. There are a lot more issues down there on land acquisition, and the actual cost of land acquisition is going to come in at. You'll probably find when all this is done, we would be better off to go to the seaward side, because we're not going to address the problems on the seaward side, and we're also going to and cop a big problem with a couple of those properties, three or four of those properties, when we lift that road level to a certain height, we're going to then have a dip in their properties, and how we're going to get the stormwater out of them hasn't been addressed, and none of that's been addressed in this application. I won't support it.
Thank you. Councillor Winter.
Yeah, look, this is...
Councillors, please. Councillor Winter has the floor.
An example where there, it's really... It's difficult sometimes to see in the contributions that councillors make, and has been pointed out, in whether we're speaking as a developer or as a planning authority. I'm very clear that we're sitting here as a planning authority, and we're assessing an application from Kingborough Council. We all know that is not a perfect situation, and we do this, unfortunately, we do this pretty regularly, and it's certainly not a perfect position to be in, because I have some really strong views about this as Kingborough councillor, but also I have to put those aside when I assess this as a member of the planning authority. What's clear from the report, though, is that there are a number of discretions listed here that are that are being sought by the developer, building and works, depending on coastal location, being one of them. And there's also some representations there that I think are very worthy representations. They unfortunately aren't all consistent with the planning scheme. I'm sure they're very emotional, because the applicant here is proposing to forcibly take people's land. And again, that debate is for another forum, I suppose. I will note that a lot of the contributions here already are contributions which would have been great in a public forum when council did consider this in closed session. Unfortunately, it was dealt with in closed session. For the reasons stated within the report, I won't be supporting this. Because of the discretion stated within the report, I think those discretions are enough to not allow this development. I'll be voting against the proposal.
Thank you, Councillor Winner. Councillor Chatterton.
I wasn't going to say anything, but I will. I think some of the comments that Councillor Winter made were very relevant, and we need to sit here as a planning authority, and we have a planning matter before us. This planning matter doesn't go into the details to which Councillor Grace quite perhaps correctly alluded to, but they come at a later stage. This is purely whether we as a planning authority will take the land and design the road to be on the non-seaward side. What follows then is the drawings and construction stuff which would come through under the works to capture in a lot of the comments to which Councillor Grace alluded. After looking at the situation as it was before, the cost to the ratepayer of doing the other option, and which was well outside the budget, this particular option does allow us to come within the budget as forecast at this point in time, and
again, this is the point of order, Mayor. This is the planning authority,
and
we is Kingborough Council, that's the applicant,
and therefore the development application is based on that. Now, unfortunately, whether you like the way in which the situation comes before us, that's the way it comes before us. And then what I'm saying is we're now assessing this as an option. And that's what the development application is giving us. It's giving us an option. And I can see no reason why we shouldn't support this option.
Question, Mayor, to Councillor Chatterton, if I may. Councillor Chatterton, you say that this has been assessed and some of the issues I raise will be addressed later, but this council won't have another opportunity to address any of the issues. But so could you please explain what you meant?
Councillor Chatterton, you do not have to...
Well, I'm quite happy to, because this is talking about a development application, not talking about a construction. and Councillor Grace is referring to construction, and the development application, if approved, will then lead in to staff coming back with a construction details.
Thank you. Councillor Atkinson, you had questions before, so you'd like to speak now?
I said another question.
Okay.
I just wondered whether the General Manager or Mrs. Loxley could clarify points like whether this is a cheaper option relevant when we're sitting as a planning authority?
Mrs. Loxley.
Through you, Chair, the cost of a development is of little concern to us as a planner when we're making a recommendation. We have to assess the application against the requirements of the scheme. And so sometimes often conditions we do put on permits can result in additional cost to people. Equally so, we may seek an amendment to a permit that is in fact a cheaper option. So the costs of a development aren't of concern to us when we're assessing an application. We just look at the impact of the development and whether it meets the requirements of the scheme. To perhaps answer some of the questions that were raised in the matter of the debate about further information, we assess an application, even when it's a council-owned application, in exactly the same way as we do with any applicant. And I make my recommendation without fear or favour, and I make my recommendation in accordance with the requirements of the planning scheme. So the application is treated no differently from our point of view.
Thank you, Mrs. Loxley.
Thank you. That answers my question.
Thank you. I'll have 20 cents worth, and then I'll ask Councillor Fox to close debate. Look, this, I realise and I know that it is a very emotional issue. I think this road for the last probably decade has been an emotional issue in one way or another. We have looked at doing work on this road for some time, and it's never been the right time. The amount of traffic movements to the Drew Point All-Purpose Park has increased. There are at least one of the two schools constantly talking to us about pedestrian safety. And even mums and dads, when they talk about taking children to Drew Point when they walk, it is a safety issue for them and their children. I also see that this development application will provide a buffer, if you like, to rising sea level, in the sense that it will raise the road by approximately 300 mils. So from that point of view, it will help the property owners in the long term, in the sense that that water will be contained on the side of the bay rather than encroaching in their properties in the short term. Of course, the downside is that not all property owners are wishful of an acquisition of land from their property. And I'm sure that everyone around this room doesn't want to see that, and that's as a last resort. But unfortunately, to get the sight lines that Councillor Reet mentioned, there is no other alternative. As far as the environmental issues, I think moving away from the shoreline and allowing that shoreline to remain being a little bit in would be a little bit more favourable. Plus the other aspect, of course, is the rail only being part of the way and not the whole way will be far more acceptable to the residents and possibly those travelling that road. So to have it on this side, or what's this recommendation, I think would probably be in that regard. It's a very, very difficult one, but I believe in this instance that we should be voting for the recommendation, and I will be doing that. Councillor Fox.
I think you've covered all the points, Mayor Walsh, and I recommend the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Fox, Fox, seconded by Councillor Reet, that in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, the Planning Authority resolves that the report of the Manager Development Services be received, and that the development application for road reconstruction and widening, including footpath, retaining wall and relocation of a shed at Esplanade from Beach Road to Drew Point Reserve, including works at 20, 26, 28, 32, 34, 36, 38, 48 and 55 Esplanade Margate for Kingborough Council be approved, subject to the following conditions, and in your report you can see that there are six conditions. Councillors in favour, if you would please say aye. Those opposing, say no. And we'll have a show of hands, please, or a division. Councillors in favour of the motion, please. Are Councillors Chatterton, Fox, Atkinson, Reet and Wass, and opposing the motion, Councillors Witter and Grace. Motion is carried. The next item is on page 170, and that is the open session of Council resumes at 6:16. And the first report is policy 3.3 donations and a recommendation on page 171. Thank you, Councillor Reed. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Fox. Councillor Reed, anything to say?
Not really. It's just updating the policy with references to the Local Government Act of 1993. And it's all fairly self-explanatory.
Thank you. Nothing to add from councillors. In that case, I will put the recommendation moved by Councillor Reed, seconded by Councillor Fox. The council adopt the updated policy 3.3 donations policy. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against, is carried unanimously. The next item is investment of funds policy on page 174 and a recommendation on page 175. Thank you, Councillor Chadden. And thank you, Councillor Reed. Councillor Chadden.
I don't think anything needs to be said. It's laid out there pretty clearly on pages 176 to 178. And just recommend the adoption thereof.
Thank you. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. I had a question and a couple of comments. I was looking at the policy in 3.11, and there's a sentence there that says the best quote will be successful, and I wondered if we adopted a similar approach to we do with, you know, tendering for works where we have a number of weighted criteria to assess the best, or what best means in this context.
Mr. Breen, are you able to answer that question for Councillor Atkinson, please?
Yes, through the Chair. Essentially, it'll be the best rate available on the particular investment that we're looking to invest, but based on the criteria appropriate to the policy. So, for example, if we've got more than 50% with one particular financial institution, then clearly we can't breach the policy to get a better rate. So it's the best available interest rate that's in line with the actual policy itself.
Thank you. I mean, as you're aware, because I've raised the issue before, I think in investment we should not just be looking at financial, but we should be looking at social and environmental issues as well. I think that to look at purely the best interest rate is too narrow, and so I'm not happy with this revision of the policy. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Fox.
Likewise, I have a question about the document. In that I can't quite put my finger... I mean, it's a list of definitions, it's a list of ways of going about things, but I'm just wondering whether there is actually a risk appetite spelled out here. Are we going to favour banks and institutions with the AAA or whatever rating, or are they? Is that going to be the only type of investment we have that we, I think, have in the past? And also... It talks about fund managers. Does that mean council staff managing those funds, or does it mean that we actually go to brokers, for example, who manage our funds?
Mr. Bray.
Two questions.
Mr. Bray.
Through the Chair, essentially this is a risk-based approach to investing our funds. What the policy does say is that for A1 plus rated financial institutions, and that's a risk assessment that's performed by Standard & Poor's, we can have up to 100% of our funds in those rated entities. The policy does say that 50%, up to a maximum of 50% in one entity, but I guess essentially over two entities you could have 100%. Then depending on the rating, so an A1 institution, we can have up to 50% of our funds and so on. So essentially it's based on the Standard & Poor's risk-based approach to investment. Just moving to your second question, Councillor, in regards to investment with fund managers, we do have some investments where we go into sort of things like managed trusts. At the moment we've got some funds with TasCorp.
which is a state-owned entity, and we just have some sort of at-call funds with Tascorp, which we can call on at any particular stage.
Thank you, Mr. Brett. Councillor Chadden, would you like to close debate? Closed. I'll put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Chadden, seconded by Councillor Reid. The Council adopts the updated Policy 3.8 Investment Funds. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? We'll have a division or show of hands, please. Councillors in favour of the motion are Councillor Winter, Councillor Grace, Councillor Chadden, Councillor Fox, Councillor Reid, Councillor Watts, and opposing the motion, Councillor Atkinson. Motion is carried. The next item is on page 179, Information Reports. If I can have a mover and seconder that those four reports be noted. Thank you, Councillor Reid. Thank you, Councillor Fox. The following information reports. Number one is the summarised financial report from the 1st of July to the 31st of July 2016. Comments or questions to that report? There are none. The second report is the General Manager's Diary for the period of the 18th of July to the 12th of August. Yes, Councillor Grace.
We're talking about the General Manager's report, are we?
We are.
Yeah. Met with Mr. Pitt and Mr. Ball. Can I just say that I had a phone call from Mr. Pitt and he appreciated that. Went away satisfied on the advice that the General Manager gave him, and that's pleasing to hear back. So I just thought I'd mention that to Council.
Thank you, Councillor Gross. Councillor Winter?
I was interested in the 10th of August, the meeting with Minister Hitting about Bruny Island Ferry. If there's any more information about what might be happening there for next summer.
Thank you. Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillors, Minister Hitting advised at that meeting that the state government would be commencing an expression of interest process shortly. And the reason for that is that whilst there's still 2 years to go with the current contractual arrangements with the ferry operator, if an alternate provider was to be given the opportunity to submit a meaningful quotation or tender to the state government, they would need at least that amount of time, particularly if, as the Minister outlined, they were looking to build a purpose-built vessel. So that was the main reason for the meeting, as a precursor to an expression of interest process.
Thanks. You've also... on local government reform, you've provided us with some advice by email, which I appreciate, but I was wondering if there was anything you can expand on for the public record about our situation with Huon Valley Council in particular, but also any extra information you might be able to provide about our amalgamation or our local government reform discussions with our northern neighbours.
Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The meeting referred to in the diary related to one with Huon Valley. The Mayor and I met with the Mayor, Councillor Code. The Deputy Mayor was unavailable and was represented by Councillor Razika. Councillor Smith was also in attendance, and the General Manager, Simone Watson. At that discussion, there was agreement that I would scope up a scoping document, a brief, if you will, and we agreed to meet again on Friday of next week to discuss that document with a view to hopefully reaching a point where both Simone and I can then put a report to the meeting of council later in September.
Great.
And the second part of your question. Later this week, Thursday morning, in fact, the Mayor and I will be meeting with the other members of the steering committee on the Greater Hobart Feasibility Study. There has been some delay in getting to a point where the baseline financial analysis could be finalised by SGS Economics, or more importantly, their subcontractor, Morrison Lowe. and that was because one of the four councils was particularly having some problems with the model that had been used and how it was, whilst it was designed to effectively standardise the four councils' long-term financial plans, one of our colleague councils felt that it showed that council in a bad light and their financial officers were trying to work through the model.
Very good. The next one is, again, I've had a briefing in private, but 25A Osborne Esplanade, I've been getting some questions from the community about where we're at. Is there anything appropriate that the General Manager can express for the public record about how that is progressing?
Mr. Arnott.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The current state of play is that the applicant, who in this case is Jaws Architect, is awaiting Crown consent. Part of the drainage solution for the proposed development application would result in infrastructure going across Crown land. And Crown consent is required to enable the DA to be re-advertised, and both parties are aware of that, and as soon as that Crown consent is received, it's been requested, and as soon as it's received, the DA will be re-advertised.
Councillor Reid.
I just realised my question relates to an issue that was in closed session, so I'll ask it then.
Thank you. No further questions in relation to the General Manager's diary. Any questions or comments regarding the minute spreadsheet? Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you. I just had a question on page 187, the fourth last note, so it says CAE 10/215, legal issue seawalls, said report finalisation by mid-May 2016. I wondered how that was progressing.
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I'll have to defer to my colleagues. I'll have to take that question on notice, Councillor Atkinson, and provide a written response.
Councillor Grace?
Yeah, just on page 187, just below the Osborne Esplanade, the redevelopment of the former high school site, various actions underway relating to the road and services design, community hub. I'm not sure. Council's adopted a certain amount on that high school. It's a bit confusing now. It's going on for so long. What is actually happening? I understand there was $2 million put aside for works on that site. Can we get an up-to-date report on it so we know what we're doing? Because I'm just dead against spending money on that site, full stop. But it's just going on and on and on. And when are we likely to see the application, development application? I mean, are we, correct me if we're wrong, but it's probably the community health centre. Is that still viable? Is that going ahead or has it died of natural? You know, we haven't heard anything about that for some time, and I'm wondering whether the government's having second thoughts about it and not going to go ahead with it. I couldn't see any money in the budget for it from the government.
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. There's in excess of $6 million in the current state budget for the health centre, so it's definitely going ahead. Yes, in excess of. In terms of our progress, Gandy and Roberts are finalising the design of the boulevard and some other roadworks in that vicinity of John Street, and once that's finalised, we'll be in a position to commence a DA application, but my colleague Tony Ferrier will be providing an update report to Council shortly.
Councillor Chadden?
Just a subsequent question to where the General Manager came from then. I take it as we are yet to purchase the land, and that's held up through the subdivision that will need to take place for the Integrated Health Care Centre, I take it, we can't do any works until such time as we get title. Am I correct,
Mr. Arrow?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. No, we whilst the two are related, we can certainly commence works, but the trigger for the actual final part of the contractual arrangements with the state government is the release of or the availability of a title for the health centre site, and that is still progressing, but it's imminent.
It's no longer called the Integrated Healthcare Centre anymore, it's just the health centre. The change. No further questions or comments. The next one is my report on the Legat conference. I did the keynote speakers. If there's any questions on that, happy to answer those.
Just interesting in your report, Mayor, on some of the speakers you went to.
These were the keynote speakers, so I didn't go to those, Councillor Grace. They were the other ones.
Oh, economic job growth rates, etc. And it makes me wonder, we talk about all this sort of thing and then unfortunately we knock back a big development tonight. But anyway, I'm not quite sure how you're going to achieve the job creations if we keep knocking things back. But that was the main issue of the LGA conference, really, was councillors working to achieve work and jobs for our municipality, wasn't it? Basically, most of the speakers.
Oh, that's something this council's had in mind. I think when you compare the one that you did, I think Councillor Reid hit the nail on the head when she said it just simply didn't meet the requirements of the planning scheme. So therefore, we can't go against our planning scheme. Okay, I'll put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Reid, seconded by Councillor Fox, that the following information reports, four of them, be noted. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against, that's carried unanimously. The next item or page is 191, confirmation of items to be dealt with. Thank you, Councillor Reid. Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. That in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, the following items to be dealt with in closed session: applications for leave of absence. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against, that is carried unanimously. Closed session, Councillor Chatterton and Councillor Reid, that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulation 2015, Council move into closed session. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against, that is carried unanimously. In accordance with the Kingborough Council meetings audio recording guidelines, policy recording of the open session, this meeting will now cease. The open session of Council is adjourned at 6:33. Okay.